notice item number 9. It lifts a gloom from the spirits. Brisk exercise brightens the disposition. Have a cheerful outlook as you exercise. Put a smile on your face. You will do all of these things. It has been shown that for people who are depressed or gloomy, that putting a smile on the face actually brightens the disposition. So you should practice smiling. It's not only good for you, it's good for everybody around you too. A smile goes miles. Isn't that nice? I like that. Okay, now on the back page of the one on exercise, the circulation is equalized. This is one of the reasons why it helps in blood pressure problems. But another reason why blood pressure is helped by exercise is that exercise builds muscles. In the muscles is where a lot of blood pressure is controlled. If your muscles are weak and small, they cannot control your blood vessel. They cannot control the diameter of the blood vessel so well, because through a very complex chemical mechanism in the muscles, the blood pressure, one aspect of blood pressure is controlled. Now notice that it says it should be taught in childhood. If you will take a look at Education 198, we didn't mention that there. It talks about posture as well as exercise that should be taught in childhood and insisted that it be maintained. Now notice mental illness is mentioned here in the exercise handout. That's one of the important things that we can do for mental illness. Remember a young man who was at Uchi Pines as a staff member. His brother had had a mental illness before, and he was working as a cook in a youth camp somewhere in the Northeast when he became mentally unbalanced again. Someone called his brother at Uchi Pines, and he drove up to get his brother and brought him back to Uchi Pines. He went on leave for several days, and he took his brother by the arm. By putting his arm, the boy was uncooperative and limp, just couldn't do anything, just totally schizoid. So the boy, our staff member, put his arm behind the elbow and grasped his forearm like this and pushed him along in a walk. They walked 8 hours a day, the boy pushing his brother along like this. When the mentally ill boy first came, he could not talk at all. Our staff member said that he drove all the way from New York to Uchi Pines, which is about a 16-hour trip, did not say one word the entire 16 hours of driving. He couldn't talk. I'm sure that he literally could not get words to bring them out. His brain was so inhibited. He brought him to Uchi Pines on a Sunday night. The first time I saw him was Monday morning. He was in that condition. And I told the boy a few things to do, a few herbal remedies for him, a diet for him, how he should massage him and exercise him and give him hot baths. And Sabbath morning, I took an early morning walk into the meadow, which is just adjacent to Uchi Pines. It's part of our campus. And when I came back, the county had just cut a nice new road right down to our campus for us. Some of us were a little worried that bringing the county road right there, we've got a lot of students and our students walk at night, and we feel very free and very secure there. A woman never feels uncomfortable on our campus walking any time of the day or night. But we were a little worried about bringing this county road right up to our campus. Maybe it might bring on some riffraff that we didn't want, even though it was a cul-de-sac there and labeled so right out of the main road. Sabbath morning, right at dawn, when I had gone to the meadow and was on my way back, and as I was coming back, I saw a strange man coming to meet me down the path. And immediately I was, you know, alert. Who is this? What is he doing on our campus? So I approached a little bit. I didn't slow my pace at all, but I approached with a little anxiety. When I got, I couldn't see well enough to know anything except that it was a man coming. So when I got close enough that I could see fairly well, and he could see me, he called out to me and he said, "Good morning, Dr. Thrash." And when he spoke, I recognized that it was the sick boy. And I said, "Good morning, how are you?" He said, "I'm better." He was walking by himself from Sunday to Sabbath. With all that walking, 8 hours a day, a full body massage every day, a hot bath, a fever treatment every day, and the kind of diet that was that's the most favorable for these people, he was well on the way to improvement. It was much improved, and the boy finally did get totally well. We've had several schizophrenics. By several, I can say six maybe that we have had who have gotten well. We don't at UT Pines. We don't take schizophrenics anymore, because we don't have the staff to handle them. But if you would like to know how we treat schizophrenics, a dollar, a self-addressed stamped envelope, we'll bring that right to your door. Maybe you'd better send a big one for that one, because it is a number of sheets. Okay, that was for mental illness, and then some other things on that. Now let's go to circadian rhythms. Do you know what circadian rhythms are? How many people do know what it is? Anybody? Oh, few of you do know. Circa means around. Dian means day. So it's around a day. It's the circle. It's the metabolic processes that we have during a day. Some people are so attuned to their metabolic processes that they can tell you exactly what time of day it is at any time. I worked at a little institution for the mentally defective when I was in medical school. One of the patients that we had was a young man named Johnny. Johnny could tell time. Well, that was most remarkable, because he couldn't count except to 12 by 1s and to 60 by 5s. He could not read one number. He could not read one letter. He was severely mentally defective, but he could tell time. His total vocabulary was probably about 200 words. So when he'd have his little colds, or he'd get cut somewhere, or he'd have a splinter under his fingernail, he'd come to the clinic for us to take care of him. So every time when he came, I would sort of make a lot over Johnny. So I'd come up to him and I'd say, "Hello, Johnny, how are you tonight?" And he'd look up and he knew my name. He'd say, "I'm fine, Doctor." I had a little bit of a stammer. I'm fine. "Dr. Thrash, how are you?" And he couldn't find his way from his building where he stayed to the clinic building, although they were just right across a little court from each other. Somebody had to lead him by the hand. He was that severely mentally defective. But I always said, "Johnny, what time is it?" And he would give his little stammer, 7:30. And he would be right on within 5 minutes, which was as close as he could count. So we wondered if he could tell time at night. We went over to his dormitory one night, woke him up. He was in a deep sleep, and you know how a mentally defective person can sleep really soundly. He was in one of those really sound sleeps. Took a long time to shake him awake, 2 or 3 minutes, really shaking him hard. Finally, he woke up, and he looked up at me, and I said, "Johnny, you know who this is?" No, "Dr. Thrash." "Johnny, what time is it?" 1:15. he had learned to tell time with an uncle who was who ran a machine shop of some kind, and his mother worked somewhere else, and she'd let Johnny stay with the uncle, and he would entertain himself by banging on something most of the day. And so his uncle would try to entertain him by telling him what time it was. Johnny, it's 9 o'clock. Johnny, it's 9:15. So when the uncle would think about it, he'd look up at the clock and tell him what time it was. And Johnny learned to tell time in that way. You've heard, these are called savants. You've heard of many of these savants. There's been two that have had widespread acclaim on TV recently. You remember some of these that play music, play the piano? We had one of these that came to Yuchi Pines. Has been there two or three times for treatment for some ailment that he has, but he's one of the famous piano players. Well, circadian rhythms are just that well developed in all of us. In the earth made new, we will all be able to tell the exact time at any time of day or night. We will also be able to remember everything that we have ever experienced, that we ever experience in the new earth. We won't remember our sins. That will require some kind of psychosurgery. But the Lord has his operating room open. He is doing psychosurgery now. He is also doing the same thing for himself. As Brother Walton said last night, the defense is so good that it even wipes out, it expunges our record of crime from the record keeper, from his mind as well. And when I think of that, what I know about the mind and how firmly fixed everything is that we've ever seen, every blade of grass you've ever seen waving in the breeze is all recorded there. We can't get at it all because we don't have a good enough recall system. It's all recorded there. And how the Lord goes about taking out our sins, leaving in our good parts, it's a miracle. Of course, it's a miracle of divine grace. Well, the circadian rhythm is something of which you should be aware so that you can cooperate with it. Notice how it works here. You see that it is down at 3 a.m. and it goes up. It should be up a little higher, actually, at 6 o'clock. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is daytime. I was thinking about the night, about the temperature. This is the general metabolic level. You will notice that it is essentially a bell curve, up and down, just the ordinary bell curve. People who are night workers, you might expect that they would reverse it so that they'd be down in the daytime, up at night, down and up, but they are not that way. The best that we can ever do, the very best that we can ever do if we are a night worker is to just flatten out the curve. There is a tax that that puts on the body so that people who work at night as a general rule live about 5 years shorter in the same socioeconomic and geographic areas than people who work in the daytime, all other things being equal. And so I recommend to people that they try to get out of nighttime jobs at least for the time they are 50. That's when I stopped delivering babies, was when I got to be about 50. I decided that I had delivered my share, about 1,000 babies, in a home birth service that we ran at Yuchi Pines for about 10 years. And I think they were all born at night. I can't remember a single daytime baby. I'm sure there must have been some, but all those I remember were born at night. And I sat up with them all night or slept in their home on a chair or something. But then I had to work the next day. So I decided that it was time for me to get out of that when I got to be about 50 and to let some of the younger women be the OB doctors and the midwives, and so I don't deliver babies anymore. Now at night, we do produce one hormone that we don't produce in the daytime. Does anybody know what that is? It's growth hormone. We produce it only at night. Furthermore, we produce it only when we are asleep. We do not produce it if we are awake at night. Furthermore, it is mainly, there it goes again, it is mainly produced before midnight. Does that seem unusual to anybody? No, it shouldn't, because we've been told by inspiration that sleep that we get before midnight is worth roughly what increment of sleep that we get after midnight? Twice. That's right. At least twice as the sleep you get after midnight is twice as beneficial as sleep that you get before midnight. Sorry? Or more, isn't it?
You said it wrong.
Oh, did I? I said it backward. Okay, it's before midnight. That's what you want. It's before, you want sleep before midnight. Now, does anybody remember where it's located? If you'll write to me, I'll look it up on my CD-ROM and I'll let you know. That's a good reference, isn't it? You might be able to find it in the index under sleep, but if you can't find it, let me know. I'll be happy to look it up. It's easy to find. I found it before, but I can't remember where it's located. Now, is there not such a thing as a night owl? I'm sure there's somebody here who says, well, I don't come alive until about 8 p.m. every night. And then everything that I like goes on from 8 p.m. on. Then I like to go to bed around 2 in the morning. Isn't that all right for me? I'm different from everybody else. That is true that you're different from everybody else. Fingerprints show that. But your blood chemistries don't show you to be anything other than a human being. And human beings produce growth hormone at night only. Adults produce it only during sleep. Children will produce it a little bit during their daytime naps, but mainly it's for them also. It's at night during sleep. Now, what does growth hormone do for an adult? We don't grow with it unless it's really excessive. What we do with growth hormone is it makes us mentally efficient. Growth hormone also makes us have a bright disposition. Growth hormone makes us able to get our housework done. And if a woman has a constantly messy house, it may be that she's not getting enough growth hormone at night. If you can't get yourself on a good program and make yourself stay on it, it may be you're not getting enough growth hormone at night. If you're a pack rat and can't decide what to throw away, you might be not getting enough growth hormone. Do you see how it may work? One of the reasons why children have such a bright disposition is because of their growth hormone, because it gives them growth hormone. Then when it starts to fall off in the teenage years, that's when they start to look a little sour because they don't have quite as much growth hormone as they did before. Okay, you can read what we have to say about circadian rhythms. I hope what I have said about it is enough to help you understand how important it is to us. The thyroid hormone is produced on time every day. That's provided you have set your biologic time clock. But you don't want thyroid hormone coming off at 2 a.m. You don't need it then. You need your metabolic systems to be revved down at that time. You want them to rev up about 7 in the morning. So if you want to get the best use of all your physiologic properties, cooperate with nature. Our divine designer knew what he was about when he designed us. Now would you look at asthma routine? I will not go through the asthma routine with you. I have talked about a few things, but there are many other things there that you need to know. Also, would you look at allergies and chronic sinusitis? I've talked about a few things in this. I would just like to mention about the elimination and challenge diet. The elimination and challenge diet is one of the best ways that you can test yourself for those substances to which you are allergic. Now, let me say this about allergies. You know that some people are allergic to airborne pollutants like carpet dust or carpet mites, carpentry stuff that we call house dust. That's material that comes from the house, from the materials that are made, that the house is made from. They are also allergic to cat and dog dander and pollens of all kinds. People can be allergic to many things that come to them through the air. I have never seen a person who was allergic to something that came to them through the air who was not also allergic to some foods if we tested for them. They may not be aware that they are allergic to some food until we test them for it. We test them for it, find some foods to which they are sensitive, remove those foods from their diet, and then often they can just sail right through the allergy season and not even sniff, even once. So it's very important that you learn what foods you're sensitive to if you have allergies of any kind. Now let's go to another thing on how to stay well or how to... Yes, yes.
I would like to testify that book on allergies.
Okay, our book called Food Allergies Made Simple. They have it at the ABC store. If anybody has allergies, be sure to get the book. It has a lot of very important information that can help you to help the person who has a problem. I don't have them all, but I have a number here. Do you have some, where is our lady? She's going to get more. The lady who is duplicating them is going to get some more. I have a few, but it's not the complete set. Now, let us study for a moment the uses of charcoal. I have mentioned the fact that charcoal is a very important remedial agent. I am constantly amazed at things that people tell me charcoal will do. To give you an example, a doctor's wife told me about her son, who was in his 20s when he was in a motorcycle accident, had severe head injuries, and was in the hospital a number of weeks in coma. Doctors finally told her that there was nothing more they could do for her son. So the next day, she said to the doctors, "If you can't do any more for my son, can I take him home?" And they said, "Yes, of course." She had a hospital bed set up in her living room. She put her son there, and she put another bed in the living room so that the two of them could sleep there together. She was going to take care of her son on a permanent basis. He had not opened his eyes in the number of weeks he'd been in the hospital, and it, as I recall, it was something like about 5 or 6 weeks. When she got him home, he had little stubby hair where they had opened his skull right after the accident and evacuated a big clot, but he had never awakened from the surgery. But she put a charcoal compress from his eyebrows all over his scalp down to the nape of his neck when she first got him home, let it stay on all night. Next morning, when she woke up, he slept all night. When she woke up the next morning, he had his eyes open. Oh, she was very encouraged. She took the charcoal compress off, and his scalp was a little bit moist looking, and you know how the skin looks when it's been moist too long. She let it dry out for about an hour, then put another charcoal compress on, let it stay about 4 to 6 more hours. And he started groaning. Again, she was very encouraged because he hadn't vocalized at all during the entire time he was in the hospital. So again, she took the charcoal compress off, left it off for an hour, put another one on, and it stayed on all night. The next morning when she woke up, he was already awake, and he was not moving yet, but he was vocalizing some and making sounds that were true sounds. It was not just moaning and groaning. Well, to make a long story short, the boy is now he never will be well, but he now has a job putting gasoline in automobiles. He can take care of all of his own bodily needs and has just made remarkable improvement. She feels that it was a charcoal compress. Now that's, I have not myself had experience like that. This is what a woman told me. And as you know, there can sometimes, even after a long-term coma, can be a spontaneous remission, although it's unusual after that length of time. I don't know whether it will help another case or not. I just tell you that because it was related to me in that way. Another very good use of charcoal is, of course, for internal poisonings of any kind, whether it be food poisoning or some kind of ingested poison. You can see all of these things that we mentioned here. It's the treatment of choice for nausea and vomiting and for diarrhea and for intestinal gas or infections. The rival medication for intestinal gas, the pharmaceutical, is called simethicone. In tests that compare for intestinal gas, the use of simethicone and charcoal shows that simethicone cannot hold a candle to charcoal in a treatment of intestinal gas. So it's the treatment of choice for that. It's a very inexpensive treatment. And if you do not have a good source to buy it inexpensively, you should be able to buy a quart jar of it for about $7 or $8. If you don't, then let me give you an 800 number where you can purchase it with a credit card, or you can order it with a check, a prepaid check. The 800 number is 1-800-542-5695. That's where you can get inexpensive charcoal. Again, it's without a peer for bad breath. If anybody has bad breath, 90% of bad breath has its origin in the mouth. A swish with charcoal every morning will deodorize the mouth. It deodorizes anything. It will deodorize an ulcer on the skin. It will deodorize a room, your refrigerator, dresser drawers. It deodorizes anything. And the way to use it in a dresser drawer is to put it in a jar, punch several holes in the jar lid, and set it in a drawer. Question? The question is about a young boy who has bad breath frequently, what to do for it, and a charcoal tablet just to have him suck on it would be fine. For children, bad breath is more likely to be metabolic. The liver, the intestinal tract, maybe bowel movements are not as frequent as would be desirable. Check his transit time and see if he has a slow transit time. Should be the transit time, the length of time food takes to pass from the mouth, the refuse, till the refuse is in the stool, should be less than 30 hours. And that's all of your marker substance. You can use little tiny beads, or you can use sesame seed, unchewed, unground sesame seed. Moisten them before you have the person swallow them. They should swallow them whole. Sorry? Charcoal works too. For some people, charcoal makes the bowels a little sluggish, and for them it may slow them down artificially. But if you drink plenty of water, the charcoal should be eliminated right on time. For a sore throat, make a little charcoal paste from the powder, or suck on a little tablet. Just take some of the, you can nibble on the charcoal paste that you make up with the powder, and it's excellent for a sore throat. Soothes it and heals it. It takes up germs like streptococcal germs and pneumococcal germs. It takes those up. Then externally, you can use them as a poultice for any kind of venomous bite, bee stings, yellow jackets, fire ants, spiders, snakes, poison ivy. But one of the best treatments for poison ivy is onion sliced very thinly and bound to the area where you have the poison ivy. Just bind it on. It's a very good healing agency. Another thing for poison ivy is holding the area where you have the rash under hot water. Hot water will stop the itch. If you're just in a frenzy of itching, if you put it under the hot water, it will sting badly, but then it stops the itch. Maybe for 8 or 10 hours, it'll stop the itch. So that's a great help to remember about. Works for any kind of poisonous plant that causes a rash, a contact dermatitis. Okay, several skin disorders, it works very well. Ear and eye infections, deodorizer for all sorts of things. In the eye, we may put a charcoal compress on the eye, but the only way that you should put charcoal in the eye is to make up charcoal water, let all the black part fall to the bottom, then take an eyedropper and pull out some of the slightly grayish water, and that can be used in the eye. All right, let's take another very good treatment. That's the use of aloe vera. Aloe vera is a very useful type of treatment. We use it for many different things. Burns of all kinds. Sunburns, chemical burns, electrical burns, cuts and wounds, hair and scalp care, hemorrhoids, poison ivy. It's very good for poison ivy. It's good also for allergies taken internally. It's good for allergic rashes put on the outside. And for skin disorders like psoriasis and eczema and infections and, of course, ulcers. Are there any questions that anybody has? Yes. Yes, you can use it straight from the plant. Now, the last little bit, I want to talk with you about something that's very important. You will find in your handout sheet a section called Problems of Early Maturity. You will also find one on diabetes there. But we will not discuss that. I've discussed diabetes a good bit, and so we will not talk more about that, but you do have a handout on it. Problems of Early Maturity. This, to my mind, is one of the most important new discoveries in child rearing. I say it's a new discovery, although Ellen White spoke of it 100 years ago. She said, let children be children as long as they can. Do not force their maturity. How do you force a child's maturity? Well, there are several ways. One way that you encourage rapid maturity in a child is by any kind of sexual stimulation, whether that be visual stimulation or whether it be by their masturbation or by talk about sexual matters in front of them. They should be allowed to be children as long as possible without their being exposed to even conversation on subjects that they should not, that they are too young to hear. Some of you may have read Corrie Ten Boom's books. In one of her books, she has a story about going with her father to a nearby town, I think it was Copenhagen, to get the exact time. They went once a month. Corrie was an avid reader, and so she read, and one of the things she liked to read the most was the Sunday School Quarterly and the Bible. So she read somewhere in the religious literature that she had, was reading, she read about adultery. So when she was on the, she didn't know what that was. So when she was on the train with her dad going to Copenhagen, she said, Daddy, what is adultery? She was about 8 or 9. And he said, Corey, when we get off at Copenhagen, I want you to take my toolbox. She said, oh, Daddy, I can't even lift your toolbox. I couldn't take it off the train. He said, Corey, that's the way it is with this subject. It's too heavy for you now. But when you get old enough and strong enough, I will talk with you about this. And I thought that was a good way to picture it. Too heavy for you now. For children's minds, some topics are too heavy for them. They don't have experience with life enough to be able to handle some topics, and these should not be opened up to them. They should be not allowed to even know about them. Now, the best thing is for them not even to know that the subject exists until they're old enough to know about it. Now, streets being what they are today and television being what they are today, sometime you may be faced with a situation in which you have to make some kind of explanation. But the smallest that you can make and put in terms that are the least threatening to be too heavy for them is certainly the best. In May the 1st of 1993, as you will see in this handout that you have in your packet, you will find that Science News had an article on early development. It was the lead article in the journal for that month, and they termed it Delinquent Developments, and that's the name of the lead article on the front of Science News. Now, I'd like it if you would all read this in the library, if you have a special interest along these lines, if you have a small child. Do, by all means, go down to the library and get Science News for May 1st, 1993, and read the entire article. This is not the only one that's been written about this, but it's one of the best and a very complete one. And I have partly summarized their article in this counseling sheet. And I'd like just to mention a few things. Notice here, the fourth line down, career criminals and temporary lawbreakers may cross paths as teenagers. What is a career criminal? Well, it's somebody who's going to be a criminal all their lives. What is a temporary lawbreaker? Well, you hope it's one that only commits one or two delinquent acts in their teenage years. You hope that a teenager will get all the way through their teen years and not do any delinquent acts. But as a study was done in Australia, there are very few teenagers who get through the teenage years, something like 5%, I've forgotten it's in here, that get through the teenage years without some delinquent act. Now, what makes it? Well, you'll notice this. Clues in childhood. This is about 8 lines down from the top. Clues in childhood to predict serious trouble in youth are, number one, the timing of puberty. Number two, certain personality traits. These are personality traits that persist from childhood and onward. And then the third one is the social world of high schools of today. Now, let's address the second one next, and that's the second one of these three, and that's personality traits. There are some personality traits in children that should be squelched in childhood. Let me give you some examples. A child may say to the mother, Mother, I want to do such and such. No, you can't do that. Ah, but I want to do that. No, you cannot do that. I'm going to do such and such. Well, about that time, she may begin to think that it's maybe a little cute, this little pint-sized person defying her in this way. This kind of thing grows with the growth and strengthens with the strength. When they're 15 years old instead of 3, it will no longer be cute. And when the child wants the car keys, he's going to get it from you. If he was able to do that thing when he was 3, that you let him do that you didn't want him to do, he's going to get the car keys when he's 15, even though you don't want him to have it. Because he knows how to make you let him have it. And he will twist you around his finger. So the time to get rid of these endearing personality traits is in childhood. That's when you can handle them. Okay, and you must teach a child to have their own self-control, but they also must be taught that there is such a thing as authority. Notice the next thing, and that's the next line. Together, these factors foster different types of juvenile delinquency, depression, eating disorders, unmarried sex, and other serious problems. These three things. So let's go to the first one, which is the timing of puberty. And here is what the science article tells. It says this, that if your child goes into puberty before the age of 15, that they are far more likely to get into these kinds of things. On the second column of the first page, notice the second paragraph that begins in the second column. It was stated in Science News that since the mid-1800s, improved nutrition and health care have lowered the average age of puberty. Now, the next statement there is my statement. It is not Science News. I would not call a type of nutrition that increased the rate of delinquency, unmarried sex, unwed pregnancy, depression, a generation gap, eating disorders, and other teen problems as being improved. I would call that a great backward step, wouldn't you? Now, you can read the rest of this as one more statement I'd like to make about this, and that is that that's in the next paragraph. Girls who did not menstruate by age 15 tended to avoid any kind of delinquency. I'm a great believer in slow maturity for children and have been for many, many years. Last week, I took a team of students from Uchi Pines, and we put on a health program in one of the local schools in our area, Fort Benning, Georgia. Lots of youngsters. I was positively amazed at the 11-year-olds who looked like 16-year-olds. One little girl, she must have weighed 130 pounds, 11 years old. And I said to her, and she was tall, well-developed. I said to her, honey, what do you plan to do when you grow up? I don't know. She couldn't really talk with me, but I asked a few questions. I asked her about other children in the family, and we had a little rapport. And it was hard for her to talk with me at all. And finally, I asked her how old she was when her menstrual period started. She said she was 9 years old. She was 11 then. And she really had no plans for her future, and I suspect we'll have a hard time either. Dropouts from school are far more likely to occur in those who have their puberty early. Now, if you have any questions, let me have those right now. Take your hands if there are those who have questions. Number one, number two, remember your number, number three. Okay, we'll take these three questions, and then probably our time will be up. Yes. Okay, two questions and a comment.
I think they've done some research on the rapid growth of development of hormones they inject into the cattle.
Rapid growth of cattle and chickens because of the hormones that they inject or feed them. And children are eating these, and in Puerto Rico they are having an epidemic of precocious puberty still going on. It's been going on for about 10 years, and they know that it's due to the local food supply, the hormones that are given to the chickens and the eggs and the milk that have the hormones in it, but the government is unable to stop the practice in the agricultural areas.
Say
second question is, what treatment do we use for fungus in the ear? It's very simple. Pour straight vinegar into the ear. Just lean over like this. Immediately, as soon as you've poured it in, tilt the head back. Take the ear and shake it. Get all the vinegar out that you can. Then take a tissue and put it on the ear finger. This is the ear finger. Old doctors used to call this in anatomy the ear finger. Put the tissue on the ear finger. Do not use a Q-tip. Do not use anything but the ear finger and the tissue. And put that in the ear and dry the ear as well as you can. Do that once a day. Okay, fungus on the toenails has a very good remedy. We've tried everything. This is the only thing that we have found that will consistently work, and it's worked in everybody that we've tried it in. We sell this, by the way. We sell it for $5 for 2 ounces. But I want to tell you how to make it up. It's easy to make up. 1 pint of vinegar. 1 pint, any kind of vinegar. 1 pint of vinegar. 1/2 ounce of calendula, C-A-L-E-N-D-U-L-A. 1/2 ounce of myrrh. That can be myrrh crystals, or it can be myrrh tincture. Whatever it is, 1/2 ounce is the quantity that you use. If you use the herb itself, it's still 1/2 ounce. 1/2 ounce of myrrh. Let it soak for 3 weeks. Shake it every day. At the end of 3 weeks, it's ready to use. Put it on the nails that are involved, the toenails, twice a day for 1 month, and then once a day thereafter for 2 years or three. It's a long-term treatment. You've got to wait until the nail entirely grows out. You have to treat it every day until the nail entirely grows out, but it'll grow out pink. Now, let's say it's on your fingernails. Then you take the same medicine. When you've got it made, take some of it and put an equal quantity of DMSO with it. DMSO you get at a health food store, or you can get it at a feed store where they have supplies for animals. It's used a lot in veterinary medicine. And then it's rubbed on the fingernail 6 times a day. It's much harder to treat fungus fingernail than it is fungus toenail.
You take the same stuff.
Yeah, the same stuff. Take a certain portion of it and mix it with an equal quantity of DMSO for the fingernails. The reason you have to have the DMSO is so that it will penetrate and stay on the nail longer. All right, question number 2. Yes. Yes. Yes.
If it's too late.
Okay, let's say that your child is already entering puberty. If they have not already had a beard growth in boys, and the testicular changes that occur in puberty, but just have a little axillary or inguinal hair growth, you can still slow it down. In girls, if they have not begun their periods yet, you can still slow it down. But it takes a big effort. 2 meals a day, total vegetarian diet, no meat, milk, eggs, and cheese. No junk foods, nothing between meals. Slow down their growth. They can have all to eat that they wish of the foods that I've mentioned, but nothing else. All that they need. Supply all their needs. Do not restrict their true needs, but do not let them overeat in any way. Question number 3. How you tell boys are getting into puberty? There are changes in the scrotum that you can recognize. They just look mature, and deepening of the voice, the growth of beard. That's one of the last ones. If they've got a few of these, I still try to slow them down. Okay.
I heard on the radio when we lived in San Antonio that county farm agent bragging about the way they treat cows nowadays.
Yes.
He was saying they give the cows so much estrogen.
Yes.
Produce the milk.
Yes.
By the time they're 5 years old, they have to send slaughter or their bones will collapse under their weight.
Yes.
And he was bragging.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's the way that the world goes today. I've been very happy to present this material to you. A lot of material. You need to come to a seminar at UC Pines. We go after it every day for 5 days, all day long, except for time out for you. And so we do hope that you will come. And did you have something? Yes.
I had a old veteran doctor over in Tootsbury about 30 years ago. He was nutrition. He said if people will eat deep greens like bell peppers.
If people eat deep greens like bell peppers. Eat them from childhood up, they'll never have cataracts, and I believe him. I believe he's right. One last comment, then we'll dismiss anybody else who wants to talk with me. You can come up afterward. Yes, scheduled for tomorrow. That's good. I'm going to follow the quarterly. Yes, I'll be following the quarterly tomorrow. It's a very fine lesson. I didn't think we should miss it. Okay, let's stand for the benediction. I want to apologize for keeping you over time. Loving Father, we're often overwhelmed at your goodness. We know that you have provided for all of our needs. Every disease of mankind, you have a remedy for it. You have a cure. Forgive us that we have not been more diligent in investigating your cures, but have rather been more interested in the commerce of disease than in investigating your goodness. Father, help those of us who are here in this room to do their investigation on their own of those things, those foods, those herbal remedies, those 8 natural laws of health that can help us in disease, so that we can be a blessing not only in our families, but in our churches and in our communities to bless those who are sick. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. International copyright 2008, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you would discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. American Christian Ministries is not a one-man band. It is an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.